Well, good morning, and thank you again for being here. I thought we'd just do a quick check-in. How's everybody doing this week? Is everybody hanging in there? Yeah. I was reading somewhere that somebody was talking about being on a Southwest flight, and the stewardess said something like, "Now sit back and relax and enjoy the flight, or sit up and be tense all the way. Up to you." And, you know, I'm feeling kind of that, right? Like where you go, we're in this moment, and circumstances are beyond us. And yet, we have an opportunity to pay attention to what's going on inside. And there's an invitation, I think, in that as well. I have enjoyed reading this man, Ron Heifetz. Has anybody read Ron Heifetz on leadership? He's this Harvard guy, and he's fantastic. But he's one of his approaches is kind of to present these like sort of two zones that we can operate in from a leadership perspective that he calls the red zone versus the blue zone. And the red zone is where we go to emotionally. It's so often our first response when we hit crisis. Most of us, even without knowing it, find ourselves in the red zone. And it's reactionary. It has a high level of angst underneath the surface. And I don't know about you, but I found myself at times this last week going into the red zone. Anybody else? Am I alone? And, you know, I mean, the truth is often we're there and we don't even pay attention, right? The red zone has this way of just sort of grabbing us. And the truth is, most of the decisions that we make in the red zone tend to be fairly problematic, right? Reactions that we later kind of look back on and go, okay, that was a bit much. And the challenge is to pull ourselves into the blue zone. The blue zone being this place of calm, a place of peace, a place where we can look objectively. And as I think about this from a spiritual perspective, I think there's so much about this that pertains to the season of Advent. Advent is a time of pulling ourselves spiritually into the blue zone as we talk about themes of hope and of peace and of joy and of love. These are the places that we are called to dwell as we wait in anticipation for the second Advent, the second coming, as that word means in Latin. And that our life down here should be shaped by these themes, these realities. They should be, Jesus would say, the fruit that just comes naturally from us. And if we get our roots down and drink from the right source, this is what inevitably comes to the surface. I remember years ago reading Francis Schaeffer. Did anybody read Francis Schaeffer? Francis Schaeffer was one who really, he was kind of like an evangelist to intellectuals back in the day. He's very bright, paid attention to the themes of philosophy and the arts as they were affecting culture, and spoke quite often about having what he would call a biblical worldview. And what he's talking about there is sort of the lens, the way that we perceive the world, the way that we see reality. And I think what was so interesting about what Schaeffer was saying is he was getting us to reflect on something that oftentimes we don't pay attention to at all. It's like the water we swim in, right? You've heard that joke about the fish and the guy says, "Hey boys, how's the water?" And they're like, "What's water?" Right? That water, I mean, we so often the way that we see the world is this thing that we're not even addressing and yet is affecting everything. And Schaeffer talked about having this right lens helps us approach it with coherence, a livable worldview. And as I think about this reality, I think about the world, and I think so much of our reactions are this sort of indication of this underlying worldview that we all have. These underlying deep beliefs that are foundational, oftentimes are different than what we would necessarily, if we had to just write it out on paper, this is what I believe, our reactions would almost tell us a more true tale of our worldview, wouldn't they? We would talk about ideas of trust and of faith, perspectives of what is to come and hope. But our actions and our emotions reveal the deeper matters of the heart. And what we're paying attention right now to with these deep waters of the heart is where we're called to grow. That the invitation of seeing the fears and the anxieties in our hearts, these are areas where God wants to come in and heal and give perspective, to bring light into those areas of our own lives that are closed off and shut in. As I look at the world, I think there are kind of these three different arcs or ways that people see. And everybody's worldview is sort of a combination of one of these or more of these three. But I think sometimes we look at life through this lens of suffering. That people look at life and see it for its hardship, for its difficulty, for its burden. And these people sort of resign themselves to life. It's the idea of eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. That all the two certainties you get in life are death and taxes. And the second, the suffering, the second might be loss. We look at this world and we see how brief it is, how short it is. That it's but a moment and that it's gone. And then there's a whole nother worldview that just says, hey, life is what you choose to make it. So live the blessed life. Live the best version of your life. Live that life of bliss right now, which is kind of the Instagram life, right? Everything is a beautiful picture. We kind of edit life. And when we think about these three, all of us probably have a tendency to lean towards one or the other. Maybe we oscillate between. But what I think is profound about a Christian worldview is I feel like it embraces all three of these things at once. Instead of avoiding suffering, it leans into suffering. Instead of pretending that death is not out there, it accepts and even sees this as a necessity. And as far as living into blessing, it doesn't diminish the hardships. But instead, it brings this greater light of revelation to the world. That light of love that shines in. And see, I think when we understand this, when we live into this, what it brings is a sense of deep calm, deep trust. And this is where we as Christians are to live, in this house of love, in this house of compassion. It's a firm foundation. And when we get shaken, we're reminded to come back into this place, to dwell into this place of compassion. I love the bowls here, but to be filled and to receive so that our life might be poured out. And when I think about Christmas and what we celebrate this really profound story that God, the Creator, God, the Infinite, comes in this incarnate form, in the body of a child. The Creator is created, comes in this place of meekness, in a place of dependence and humility, and brings with him this message of love that will transform the world. Philippians tells us, though he was in the form of God, he did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And this is what Jesus does. He enters in to the briefness of life, born as a man. He enters into a world of suffering and suffers. In Hebrews 2, it says, therefore he had to be made like his brothers in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God, to make a propitiation for sins of the people. For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. This idea that Jesus comes and endures everything that we endure, in fact, carries the burden of things that are beyond us to ever repay, and then resurrects in this beautiful picture of what is to come. This gift of the certainty of what lies ahead for each one of us. In 1 Corinthians 15, it says, but in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For as by a man came death, by a man has come the resurrection of the dead. Death is swallowed up in victory. Oh, death, where is your sting? Victory. Oh, death, where is your sting? And so you see this sort of embracing of all these things, pulling it into one in a way that like takes our minds beyond this world, takes us beyond these things. It provides context to where we see the burdens and the suffering of this life is something small, ultimately inconsequential. In 2 Corinthians 4, Paul writes these words, "We do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." And this is what this love does, is it raises our gaze. It extends the horizon beyond where we were staring. It allows us to see and understand all that awaits and how that throws things into perspective, into a sort of contrast. We look at the fears and the anxieties and the struggles that we might face this week, the uncertainties, the inconveniences, all of these things. And when we're tempted to go into that red zone of, oh, woe is me, right? Jesus speaks those words, all shall be well. All shall be well. And every manner of thing shall be well. And I think when we come into that place, we're able to see clearly. That's the light that shines in the darkness. It's what illuminates the things around us that might otherwise overwhelm us. We see and we have that reassurance. But I think it goes, excuse me. It's COVID, I think. Just kidding. It's not. That light comes in. It illuminates, I think, that thing that we're starving for. Not just to have the truth, but something even deeper than that truth. But to have God's love. And I think ultimately in the end, that is the thing that we ache for beyond all else. That it doesn't just make sense of this world, but it speaks to the deepest desires of our hearts. To be known and to be loved. Paul says, "For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." So that you would know this love. It reminds me, there was an interview years ago with Carl Jung, the psychologist, where he was asked, "Do you believe in God?" And he says, "Oh, I used to. I used to believe in God." And then he pauses and he says, "Now I know God." And to go, oh, that's what we're talking about here. That there's a belief, and a belief is good, and we should believe, and God help our unbelief. But what God wants is for you to know his love. Love that goes beyond our comprehension. I love that. Knowledge that surpasses knowledge. It's that thing that you can't get your head around, right? That thing that doesn't quite make sense, but is. I think about times where that sort of reality would hit me, and often it's when I'm not expecting it. I'm sitting somewhere, and I told you about recently, I was sitting at this little abbey that I like to go to, there by myself in this service where nobody else was except these monks up front singing, and all of a sudden feeling like it was just God and I in this little sacred space, and feeling God draw near, feeling that love draw near. There's nothing like it. It goes beyond our ability to comprehend. We see known, we feel known, seen, and understood. And I think this is what Paul is saying, keep before your minds when things get hard, when things become difficult, when the burdens feel like too much. This is what you come back to. This is where you draw near, is to this compassion of God. That you sit there in that place and just simply let him pour in. When we're reacting, when we're in the red zone, right? Everything's just spilling out of us, right? There's no room. It takes a heart that is open and surrendered and receptive. A heart that's relaxed. It's Jesus in the front of the boat, in the midst of the storm, sleeping. And all the disciples are going, don't you care about us? And Jesus, in that case, gets up and calms the waves. Which was always an option, by the way, which is why he just wasn't worried about it. And we start our kind of church calendar year at this time. It begins with Advent. It's a way of like setting our sights on what matters most, setting the course of our life based on this gift of God coming to earth, this story of meekness and gentleness, compassion and kindness. We pay attention to it. I like the writer of Hebrews says, we pay much closer attention to what we've heard, lest we drift away from it. Because we do, we drift from this truth all the time. The anxiety and fear in our life reveals it, the anger that comes spilling out, the impatience, the ways that we don't act like we know we should, where the fruit comes out and it doesn't taste very good, right? We've drifted. We've lost our way. And the invitation is always to come back. Come back to this truth. Refocus. This is our true north. When we drift, we start becoming really transactional. We become real comparative. We start evaluating. We start blaming. We start criticizing, right? This is the fruit of that heart turned inward. Advent brings us back into the season where we remember that we are waiting still. And we set our eyes, we set our minds, we set our hearts on a love that is beyond our ability to comprehend. And Jesus would tell stories to help us comprehend this kind of love because it just doesn't make sense to us. He would say it's like a son who's like blown his whole inheritance in defiance of his father. And finally, in complete humiliation, he decides maybe I can come back as a slave. And as he's walking back, his father sees him from afar and runs to him. And before he can even get an apology out of his mouth, he's embraced and kissed. He tells a story of a vineyard owner who hires all these people throughout the day and then in the end just pays them all the same amount of money. And the guys at first that started are like, hey, what the heck? I worked the whole day. And Jesus is going, no, this is how God's love works. It just pays in abundance. Doesn't give us what we deserve. It gives us far more than we deserve. That God's like this shepherd and he's got these 100 sheep and loses one and decides to leave these 99 and go looking for that one that's lost. Going after it, searching after it to find it. All these stories are about us. They're about you. You are the prodigal. You are the lost sheep. You are the worker who showed up at the end of the day and got a full day's wage. And Paul's going, can you wrap your mind around that? That's God's love. When you turn it into a transaction, when you see God as maybe like withholding or somehow punishing you for something you've done. This grace is just a gift. And that's hard for us to understand. It's humbling to receive. God comes in all his power and empties himself of all of that power and becomes this helpless child. And then this carpenter's hands are pierced by nails. This is a king who rules by becoming a servant, who teaches us that greatness is humility. and to live we must die. I read this from one of my favorite guys right now. His name's Robert Capon, who's a priest and also a chef, which is a powerful combination, right? He actually writes like a cookbook that is like a spiritual cookbook. He says, trust him. And when you've done that, you're living the life of grace. No matter what happens to you in the course of that trusting, no matter how many waverings you may have, no matter how many suspicions you've bought a poke with no pig in it, no matter how much heaviness and sadness your lapses, vices, indispositions, and bratty whining may cause you, you believe simply that somebody else, by his death and resurrection, has made it all right. And you must say thank you and shut up. The whole slop, closet full of mildewed performances, which is all you have to offer, is simply your death. It is Jesus who is your life. If he refused to condemn you because your works were rotten, he certainly isn't going to flunk you because your faith isn't so hot. You can utterly fail, therefore, and still live the life of grace. You can fold up spiritually, morally, or intellectually and still be safe. Because at the very worst, all you can be is dead. And for him who is the resurrection and the life, that just makes you his cup of tea. Don't you love that? He's a fantastic writer. Just makes you his cup of tea, this love that's like that big. I've heard somebody say, you know, if God's love, if the gospel isn't too good to be true, then you haven't quite got it, right? Like, it should mess with us a little bit. So a little foreshadowing of where we're going to go as we've been studying through 1 John. But in 1 John 3, he's been talking about this, the love of God, the love of God, and then he just like bursts out and he says, see what kind of love the Father has given to us. In the King James, he says, behold what manner of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is, and everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. And John, it's like he gets kind of overcome, right? I like how Paul says, the knowledge that surpasses knowledge. John says, behold, behold this. You get the feeling that the author of this letter is beholding it and going, oh my gosh, you guys, you're his kids. Like all these little kids up here stumbling around, right? Like these little sweet girls going a little bit off key as they sing, which is probably each of us in our life. So embarrassed, right, that we didn't quite hit all the notes right. And you see God's heart just so full as he looks at you. Gosh, do you feel that? Nothing pulls us into the spiritual blue zone like this compassion and grace of God. In Matthew 7, Jesus says, if you know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? Behold, what manner of love. That word, what manner, it's an idiom in the Greek. There's like not a good translation for it. It's like if you wrote down it's raining cats and dogs and then tried to translate that into another language, nobody'd understand it. But this what manner, people struggle to translate this little phrase, but it means more probably literally, like, where did this come from? Almost like saying, behold, what planet did this come from? Which to me is exactly right. Like, this came from outside in. This isn't the kind of love that, like, boils up from our hearts. This is the kind of love that comes down like rain. And compassion, that word just quite literally means to be with you in suffering. Compassion is to be with someone in suffering. And when we look upon the love and compassion of Jesus, we see one who comes and is with us in this moment here and now. As we are unsure, as we get afraid, as our faith and beliefs waver, Jesus comes in and shines that light of compassion. He's with us. He says these words, well, this is from Henry Nouwen. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. The voice uttering these words sounds all through history as the voice of God's messengers, be they angels or saints. It's the voice that announces a whole new way of being, a being in the house of love, the house of the Lord. The house of love is not simply a place in the afterlife, a place in heaven beyond this world. Jesus offers us this house right in the midst of our anxious world. And to be able to receive that in, it's just simply a matter. Like Jesus refers to this sort of door of our heart, and he's just saying, open it and I'll come in. Right? It's just this yielding of our hearts, saying, please. He wants to come in and dine in your hearts. He wants you to know him like he knows you. And we lose our way, so we stop and we pause at that door and we open it. Some of you may never have done that. And it's as simple as that, saying yes, saying come in. But when he does, he dwells, and that dwelling changes everything. You realize that this life is just the beginning of something. And that this becomes our hope. This is where we dwell. This compassion transforms this world into just one new chapter after another. And I read this week, and I thought, oh, I'm going to read it for you. It's from Gregory Boyle, who has a ministry in L.A. where they basically do a rehab for ex-felons. And in fact, you can't get a job at his place unless you have a felony. But he's so good. It's called Homeboy Industries. But he writes this about the passing of his mother. And he says, a few years ago, I buried my 92-year-old mother. She died as we would all want to, in her own bed, in her own home, surrounded off and on by her 8 kids and many grandchildren. I'd buried my father some 22 years earlier. My mom was sharp till the last. In fact, in the last year of her life, she watched so much MSNBC, she'd become Rachel Maddow. And she was not a lick afraid of dying. Some 3 weeks before she died, she said to me, giddy and exhilarated, I've never done this before. It was something you'd say just before skydiving. In fact, the day before she died, I was alone with her, the rarest of things, and she was asleep. When her eyes opened and she saw me there, she scowled, oh, for crying out loud. And she closed her eyes. She was mad that she wasn't dead yet. Sorry. But the next day, my sisters went out to retrieve lunch, and I was alone with her again, sitting at the foot of the bed. At exactly noon, she opened her eyes, lifted her head some, let out a glorious, wondrous gasp, skydiving, and she left us. And no one in earshot of the sound would ever fear death again. And this is where we live. We live in this space in between these two advents. We live with this reminder of God coming to earth, showing his love, pouring his love out on us, dying for us on the cross. And we too live in this world where there continues to be suffering, there continues to be strife, there continues to be death, and we shine this light of life into the world. We shine this hope into the darkness, and we persevere and we endure, and we do so with joy because Christ is with us and will come again. I have some questions for you to ponder as we close. And the first, I said, what are the things in my life that rob me of my peace? This is a question I've asked you before and will ask you again. What things send me into the spiritual red zone? How do I respond? What am I afraid of? I think sometimes sitting with God in our weeds like that and just being really honest is one of the best things that we can do. God, I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid to trust you with this. Can you see yourself as God's child? To realize you are still an infant in his eyes? How does it feel to rest in that reality? How does the love of God speak directly to my fears and concerns? Like a parent would speak to their children as they come up on stage. Words of love and affection. And number three, how can I see past the fears and anxieties in others and speak compassion to the deeper needs in them? Seeing others as scared kids, how might I see them as one of God's children? How can I love them with God's love? It's my prayer as we're coming to the end of our Advent season, that we would be rooted and grounded in God's love. And I thought I would just, as a blessing, read those beautiful words from Ephesians 3 over you this morning. We're going to have people down front to pray for you if you would like prayer. There's food, and you can be out in the patio and just hopefully enjoy one another's presence here today. But let me read these words of Paul as he prays these over the Ephesians and prays them over us today. He says, "For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." Amen. God bless you guys. Thanks for being here.